What an election year it has been. It certainly has not been boring. Hi, I'm Edmundo Resendez, your host today for Voice of the Public. Join us for a 2016 election special. From the national presidential race to local politics, what's on your mind on the eve of the election? Did you vote early? Are you still undecided? Undecided? How is that even possible? It's an open line show. Here's your chance to let your voice be heard. Call in at 575-646-2212 or join us on social media. Our guests today are Dr. Fred Martino, Content Director for KRWG-TV and FM, and Dr. Nancy Baker, author and retired government professor at New Mexico State University. It's a 2016 election special on Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. Your calls and our guests after the news. Welcome to Voice of the Public. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Thank you for joining us today on this special 2016 election special, where we are encouraging you to call in at 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or join us on our social media desk where Simon Thompson is standing by, ready to take your questions or comments on the election. It's an open line show, meaning that it's all about you. What's on your mind? What have you been thinking about? It certainly has not been a boring election, indeed. And for those of you that are still undecided, call in and let us know what's it going to take to help you make that decision on who to vote for. 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212. My guests today, my very special guests, I should say, are Dr. Fred Martino, Content Director for KRWG-TV and FM. Fred, welcome to Voice of the Public.
Good to be here.
And my other guest is author and retired government professor at New Mexico State University, Dr. Nancy Baker. Dr. Baker, welcome back to KRWG. Glad to bring you out of retirement.
Well, I've always enjoyed being on your program, Edmundo.
Well, welcome back, and you are author of a new book called?
Vanished. It's my first foray into fiction. I've published three nonfiction books, two of them academic, but this was fun. I didn't have to have footnotes.
You didn't have to have footnotes. Now, tell us what the book is about.
Well, it's a story actually that parallels some of my own experiences. I traveled overland around the world in 1978 and 1979, and I was so clueless. Governments were falling around me. I had no idea. So I decided to write the story from that perspective of half of it, a young woman doing that travels, and the other half, a political science professor who had been her friend all those years before, 2007, trying to find her again, but she vanished.
Okay, so that's and that's coming out when?
November 13th.
November
it'll be
13th.
On Amazon as both an ebook or a paperback.
Okay. Well, today we are here to discuss the election. There's been so much that has been happening with this election that literally from national politics to local politics, which we do want to get into as well, we want to kick off the conversation and pretty much set the tone for the show for what drove and has been driving the national election conversation, which is Donald Trump. The following are just a few clips of some of the controversial things Donald Trump has said and that Hillary Clinton has tried to define him in the presidential race. While we listen to them, why don't you give us a call and be part of the conversation at 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212.
John McCain, a war hero, 5.5 years as a POW, and you call him a dummy. Is that appropriate in running for president?
Okay. He's not a war hero.
He's a war hero.
He's a war
five
hero.
5.5 years.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you. Do you agree with that?
He's a war hero because he was captured.
Putting a wife to work is a very dangerous thing. When I come home and dinner's not ready, I go through the roof.
Grab them by the
and when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
More accusers coming forward to say they were sexually assaulted by Donald Trump.
And I'll go backstage before a show.
Yes.
And everyone's getting dressed.
Donald Trump walked into the dressing room while contestants, some as young as 15, were changing.
Yeah. Standing there with no clothes. You see these incredible looking women.
I'd look her right in that fat, ugly face of hers.
She ate like a pig.
A person who's flat-chested is very hard to be a 10.
So you treat women with respect?
I can't say that either.
All right, good.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. I'll use the word anchor, baby.
This is a country where we speak English, not Spanish.
You're going to have a deportation force.
I will get rid of gun-free zones on schools. My first day, it gets signed.
A total and complete shutdown
of Muslims entering the United States.
Do you still believe that Muslims should be banned from entering the country until we can figure out what's going on, as you've said?
Yes, we have to find out what the hell is going on.
What do you think of what I said? It's fine. And if we want to go stronger, I'd go stronger too.
When you get these terrorists, you have to take out their families.
Bomb the shit out of them.
Maybe Syria should be a free zone for ISIS.
Can you tell the Middle East we're not using a nuclear weapon?
I would never say that. I would never take any of my cards off the table.
How about Europe?
I'm not going to take it off the table.
You might use it in Europe.
He appeared to mock a reporter with a disability.
I don't remember.
Planned Parenthood should absolutely be defunded.
How do you ban abortion?
You'll go back to a position like they had, where people will perhaps go to illegal places.
Should the woman be punished for having an abortion?
There has to be some form of punishment.
Will you condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or other white supremacists?
I don't know anything about white supremacists, so I don't know.
Knock the crap out of him, would you?
Like to punch him in the face.
Everything I say I'm going to do, folks, I do, okay? I do.
Those are from some ads that the Hillary Clinton campaign released in this past year of some of the controversial things that Donald Trump has said in the past. You're listening to Voice of the Public. I'm Edmundo Resendez. My guests today are Dr. Nancy Baker, author and retired government professor at New Mexico State University, and Dr. Fred Martino, content director for KRWG-TV, FM, and TV. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Dr. Baker, what happened to the Republican Party in 2016? This was long known as the party of family values. Win or lose, where does the party go after Donald Trump?
I think that's a very good question, and it's one that the Republican establishment is really struggling with right now, because there are so many of Donald Trump's supporters who are backbone supporters of the Republican Party, and they can't be controlled by the party elites any longer. I think it shows that the party had gotten out of touch with some of the most heartfelt concerns many of the longtime supporters, but also that they are what Donald Trump has done, though, is not invented something. This has been an undercurrent. A lot of his rhetoric is explicitly stating things that have been undercurrents within the Republican Party, certainly since 1968. So it's to some extent, it's making explicit some of the racist strategy, for instance, that started in 1968 with Richard Nixon. He called it explicitly a Southern strategy of dividing Southern white voters from the Democratic Party, where they had been for a long time. So, to some extent, it just makes explicit what was already in the party. But really, this is a very dangerous direction, I think, for the Republican Party and really for the country. And the Republican elites can't just be exclusionary. They have to figure out what's happened with the party. Can they bring it back together again? Will it be? They're losing a lot of Republican women for sure.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You can also join us on the social media desk, where Simon Thompson is standing by, ready to take your questions or comments on the election. And it's an open line show, so it's all about you and what's on your mind. Fred Martino, when this campaign started, this election, the primary started, we started out with 16 candidates on the Republican side. How surprised were you when we wound up with Donald Trump as the Democratic nominee?
I was extremely surprised, and I want to thank you for playing that montage of clips, because it really, I think, is an important service in showing the wide variety of things that Donald Trump has said over the course of this election, and that really puts it into perspective.
And by the way, Dr. Martino, I do want to say that I do take the time to edit those, and I ran out of time in trying to come up with so many. And
you had to put a lot on the cutting room floor, right?
There was a lot on the cutting room floor.
But it's a very important service because it's easy to forget we've been through so much in the last year at the incredible number of things that have been said. And I think it's very important because regardless of how you feel about an individual candidate, this is a coarsening of our dialogue. It's a coarsening of our politics. And many would argue that that is very, very dangerous. I feel that way personally, that this is damaging our democracy, this election, because it has taken us away from a focus on important issues. The elections need to be, most importantly, about public policy. What are the decisions that the people we elect to office will be making? And this election, I think, largely, I blame the commercial media for the cocaine of Donald Trump. I mean, he was very clearly admittedly by some media executives, someone who attracted ratings, who attracted attention. And so the news of the day became, well, what's the latest tweet from Donald Trump? What's the latest comment he's made?
And by the way, media started handling interviews differently. Whereas before, if a guest wanted to come on one of the morning shows, they had to be there physically, in person, or via satellite. Donald Trump changed all that and said, I just want to call in from the comfort of my home. And all of a sudden, you had every news organization allowing for a call-in from a guest, whereas that was not the case before.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the Trump campaign presents this as that he has been really abused by the news media.
I do want to talk about what role the media played in all this. But right now we have Dan, who is standing by with a comment. And you can join us right here on Voice of the Public at 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Or you can join us on our social media desk on Facebook and Twitter. Dan, good afternoon, and welcome to Voice of the Public.
Yeah, hello. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this matter. I'll just share with you that in the election in which Governor Martinez was triumphant, I was a challenger for a Democratic candidate at one of the polling places. And when I appeared there to do my task, the Republican challenger was an ex-military guy, a former Marine, and very straight and trim and everything. And he was really ready to take on the world because he'd been to classes that were held for challengers at the polling places by the Republicans, in which one of the things they talked about was busloads of people showing up with wide-brimmed hats, speaking with accents, planning to vote illegally and move from one polling place to the other.
So your argument is this was before Donald Trump. In other words, this kind of rhetoric, maybe it wasn't as well known, but it was out there.
Oh, yes, it was certainly out there here in this area. And it took me a while to kind of calm him down a bit and explain to him that, that really was not very realistic, and he eventually did, calm down, and we got along fine during the period I was over there. So, but I just mentioned that, this stuff has been going on for a while. You know, there's nothing new about political corruption, you know. In the matter of fact, George Washington won his first election with the House of Burgesses in Virginia by providing better brandy than the other guys, you know. So, but this stuff that's going on now is really exceptional, and so I certainly agree with some of the statements I've heard, but the issue is that people really do respond. You know, it's almost like the Pavlovian, idea of, getting into people's basic psyche here with some of this hatred and everything else. And I'm going to be a poll watcher this time, so interesting to see what turns up in this election. But I think we've entered a period where there are people who really don't have much use for democratic government and representative government and government by consensus and cooperation. And we see the same thing in the Middle East, you know. That's another counterpart of the same thing. It's really sad that we've got it going on in this country. But
okay, Dan, thank you very much for joining us. Now, we've got some other calls that we want to get to.
Absolutely.
We do get some other calls we want to get to. Dan, thank you very much.
Great call. Thank you.
Great call. Thank you very much.
And I do want to return to your point, Dan, about the allegations of voting rigging, but I think we'll have a chance later on.
Okay. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go now to Simon Thompson, who's standing by the social media desk. Simon?
How's it going, Edmundo? So we have a listener over Twitter, a listener in North Carolina. He asks, Governor Pence advocated for diverting taxpayer dollars to so-called conversion therapy, a.k.a. brainwashing. Do we want to do that in America?
I think that there's no evidence that conversion therapy has any at all positive benefits. It's the notion that with a lot of psychological counseling, you could take care of someone's same-sex urges. And in fact, it harks back to the old American Psychiatric Association designation of homosexuality as a mental illness. Long, 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 long debunked. Just absolutely not true. So what it is not only a false kind of approach if you're concerned about same-sex activities in the society, it actually is harmful to the individuals who undergo it, and it's very, very psychologically damaging. I think that it's been discredited over and over and over again. It's really had concrete damage to individuals who've been subjected to it, and I do not agree respectfully, may or not, with Mr. Pence on this issue.
Dr. Baker, let's talk about the idea of election rigging and allegations on election fraud. How probable is it that there could be election fraud? I mean, we've been hearing about the Russians possibly hacking on election day, and there's been all kinds of accusations out there. What's your research on this?
Well, actually, it's a very important point, because we do want to ensure that elections are free and fair and that they're not being rigged. At the same time, we want to be careful in how we approach this so that we narrowly tailor those efforts so we don't end up disenfranchising people, because voting is also a fundamental liberty. So you've got these two tensions operating. In point of fact, the evidence of fraud in the modern presidential race is simply not there. There was an exhaustive study of all votes cast in American elections between 2000 and 2014. So we've got a billion votes, scholars looked at. There were 31 possible cases of fraud out of 1 billion. So even rare, multiple voting, registration fraud, all those things are very, very rare. They're simply not there. But the problem is, and this is a point that Dan made, is that earlier on these allegations did exist. And in fact, you might remember that our Secretary of State, Diana Duran, in 2011 alleged that there were 117 cases of foreign nationals in New Mexico registering to vote and 37 voting. But after a year of various investigations and allegations, it only came out in the end two non-citizens were found to have registered. One had voted, a longtime resident of the state who'd simply gotten confused, had no intention of violating election code, and the Secretary of State recommended leniency. So even in the instance that we've seen here, It just doesn't happen. But what it has done is fueled the passage of these voter ID laws, and there's now 16 states that have them, all in the name of fighting voter insecurity and these multiple identity things. What we are finding, though, is there are other possible frauds. Misleading voters. There's been some reports of Twitter targeting either black Democrats or Spanish-speaking Democrats with false news. You can vote by tweet. You cannot. That will not count. North Carolina is under a lot of investigation because three counties there have been purging their election polls at the last minute without adequate notice to voters. And then there is a problem of at least one person, an Iowa woman who was arrested last week for voting twice because she believed it when she was told her first vote for Donald Trump would not count, and she wanted to make sure it did. So she's now been arrested with first-degree election misconduct charges. So there are these kind of weird instances, and of course things of voter suppression we could talk about too that could be troubling for intimidating people. But overall, we have a very healthy system. It's a very decentralized election system. We have, what, over 3,000 county clerks, and they're the primary ones that operate elections. We have secretaries of state in each individual state that oversee the processes, and 30 of the 50 are Republicans, so that should assuage some of the concerns of Trump supporters. There's no way now. In fact, there's been some researchers, some scholars and experts who really could be experts at hacking, and they say you can't do it. You cannot do it. Our election system is just too decentralized to do on any sort of scale that would be have any impact. Hmm.
Dr. Nancy Baker, author and retired government professor at New Mexico State University, is our guest today on Voice of the Public, as is Dr. Fred Martino, content director for KRWG-TV and FM. Right now we want to go to a call on the line at 575-646-2212. Ben, good afternoon, and welcome to Voice of the Public.
Hi. So I don't think either of our candidates are really the greatest candidates from either party. I had heard the clips that you played at the beginning about what Donald Trump has said, but I'd like you all to address what Hillary Clinton has done. She has time and time again lied to the public. She has, of course, broken the law. If she was a person serving in the military with much less classified information that she would have misused, destroyed, or kept on a public server, then she would have been put to jail, but she's been able to escape through this. So I'd like to know what your comments are on those things and her ability just to repeatedly lie about the things that she has done. Another example is landing under sniper fire. She said she landed under sniper fire and she had a greeting ceremony. So if you could address that, I'd appreciate it.
And regarding the sniper fire, I know she's come out and retracted that statement, saying that was false. So what do you say to Trump supporters who argue, forget what Trump has said, because he's only said those things, versus what Hillary has done?
Well, I think there is not a prosecutable crime related to the emails, and that made very clear in the report that was issued by the FBI, which are not in her pocket, that did a very exhaustive study. I think some of the allegations relating to Benghazi have been exhaustively examined as well. There really is
by congressional and
FBI investigative. There's no credible evidence at all. These are actual violations of the law, I think, which she has admitted, they're violations of good judgment. But it wasn't, if we go back to the time that she was in the White House and then when she was Secretary of State, and we look also at the George W. Bush administration, using private servers was not that unusual, or destroying emails was not that unusual. Millions were destroyed as well in the Bush administration. It was just as a matter of course. In fact, as presidential scholars, we were frustrated because with more and more things happening on email, we were afraid we wouldn't have an archival record in the future to study administration. So this is not, it's not new with her. I think it has sentiment, American public opinion has changed on those issues over time. But at the time that she was engaging in this, it really was not.
And Hillary Clinton has admitted that the use of the private server was a mistake. But there's a lot of context that's often missing from the coverage. I mean, one of the things that I think is very important to mention is that, as I understand it, anything that might have been classified did not say classified. The most was there was a C that was on the email. So there wasn't maybe proper marking of all of the documents. The other thing is that her Colin Powell said, you know, you need to use a private, you know, your own server. So she also had advice before taking the position to use it. I also get very concerned when I hear these comments, because we have a false equivalency here. So we now have this new thing that comes out where the FBI director says, well, there's some more emails, and that's all the information that we have. We, you know, they may not be anything, which I think a lot of critics, including many in the Justice Department, say this was a bad thing to do right before an election, to say, well, there's more emails, we don't know what they are. And to make that, you know, this very vague thing equivalent to very specific problems, I think, is that in the case of Donald Trump, is a bad thing to do. I mean,
it's not just language. We do know that Donald Trump has been sued 1,700 times for non-payment of bills to workers and contractors. We do know that, you know, he's going to be going to trial on allegations of a rape charge, which might not be true because, of course, you're innocent until proven guilty. But the fact that this has not really been covered, the fact that we don't know from his tax records what kind of associations, business connections he has, it might prove to be a conflict of interest when he's in the White House.
And Nancy, you know, I have to mention, I was kind of expecting this question to come up in one form or another. You know, one could argue that the most important case Trump and his supporters make is that he will end politics as usual. It's also the main ammunition he uses against Hillary Clinton. You know, she's part of the establishment, in other words. But Trump made an improper donation, a $25,000 gift from the Donald Trump Foundation in 2013. At the time, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi, who received this donation, was considering whether to investigate fraud allegations against Trump University. Bondi decided not to pursue the matter, and Trump had to pay an IRS fine for that donation. So again, this is not speculation. This is not, there might be something wrong. This was wrong. A fine was paid. And to somehow let's make that equivalent to, well, there might be something here, or there were problems. I mean, it's just not. Okay. Really the right thing to do.
575-646-2212, 575-646-2212. You can also join us on social media, where we are getting lots of questions and comments. We'll go to Simon Thompson in just one bit. We want to go to Martina, who is standing by. Martina, thank you for being patient with us on Voice of the Public. Martina.
Yes, I'm here. I'm an educator in New Mexico, and one of the things that I'm most concerned about is almost the distraction of the national election in people not paying attention to local elections for state house, state representatives and things like that.
True.
Because I've got to say that having lost the House of Representatives to the Republicans, having a Republican governor, no favors have been done for education, for our university system, for our community colleges, for our local schools. We need to have the type of civics education that I grew up with an immigrant mother who let me know that voting was one of the most important things I could do for my locality, whether I was in Michigan or now in New Mexico. I'm very supportive of a local candidate because I talked to her. She's a Democrat. I'm a Bernie-crat, and she's coming out for education and for behavioral health. It's important to see where our local candidates are getting their money, what positions they're subscribing to, how they're supported by the congressmen and by the local, state, and national parties. We really need to have the kind of education that many of us grew up with. Dr. Baker, you're doing a great job. So are you, Mr. Martino. Thank you for doing this program.
Thank you for joining us, Martina. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You can also join us on social media, where Simon Thompson is standing by. So what has this national election done for local politics?
What has it done? Well, I mean, I agree
with
the caller that, you know, the presidential election has overshadowed many of our local and state elections. Of course, we were talking about this before the show began, that, you know, public media has tried to raise awareness about many of the state and local races.
Yes.
We've aired interviews and we've aired debates.
Yeah.
With many of our local candidates, so it's very important to get that out there. But in terms of local television news, national television news, the focus has been, again, on the presidential race, which we expect to a certain degree, but I think this year we've seen it at a much higher level because of the quote-unquote entertainment value of Donald Trump.
And of course, not just entertainment, but these are some issues. The candidates are widely divergent on some key policy areas, so rightfully we're concerned and we're all paying attention, no matter what side we're on. Where this might help with local elections is we could have a larger, presidential elections generally bring a larger voter turnout, which can help down-ballot candidates. In the off-year elections, the turnout could be like 20% or 30%, and here it's generally in the 50 up to mid-50 range during presidential.
Do you think, though, Nancy, that will be blunted in New Mexico because the former Secretary of State eliminated straight party ticket voting in New Mexico?
Well, I think we'll find something interesting happening here because we could very well have a candidate, say a Republican woman, who votes for Hillary at the top of the ticket and then switches and votes Republican further down the line. Or you could have a disaffected Anglo male voter who's voting with Trump at the top of the ticket, but then switching and voting from some of the local people that he knows personally and supports. So split ticket is we've started to see more of that anyway. And candidates in the last couple of years sort of running of trying to get a coattail operating, and it's very,
yeah,
very hard. It's
and
very hard.
One other thing, Edmundo, responding to our caller. You know, in terms of state and local races, one other development that's very disturbing, we saw it in the Las Cruces municipal elections, we saw it again this year, is that some candidates now refuse to participate,
yes,
in media interviews and forums, and
yes,
they even refuse to submit statements to the League of Women Voters for the Voters
Guide.
Let's talk
about that, Fred, because yes, you were very actively involved in the process, because, you know, through the forums here at KRWG, but in addition to that, your involvement with the League of Women Voters, what impressions did you get from that? Where you did have some candidates that just refused to fill out something that's a tradition.
Well, you know, I mean, I have no idea, and I'm sure there are different reasons depending on the candidate as to why they don't participate. But, you know, from a perspective of democracy and journalism, it's bad. I mean, we need all the information we can get. And it's so fascinating because one of the things I really liked about our League of Women Voters forums and,
yes,
some of the interviews I did was those questions came from the public. We asked the public, submit your questions to us, and they came up with fantastic questions. And in some cases, some issues, it was not partisan. So you had both Republicans and Democrats, for instance, supporting the idea in New Mexico of a paid full-time legislature. This actually came from a Republican, Terry McMillan, who spoke in one of the forums very strongly for this. You have many Democrats who also support that idea, because saying that we don't have a diverse enough legislature as a result of the volunteer aspect, that most people can't take work off,
yes,
for a month or 2 months and be a legislator.
All right, let's go to our social media desk where Simon Thompson is standing by. Simon, you've got two questions or comments. What's on the mind of our social media desk, on the social media desk?
The European Union prevents Europeans from being at war with each other. Why wouldn't Americans want that with their neighbors? Why is the public against free trade agreements when they are an effective form of foreign policy and when they cause aggregate growth to economies?
Well, we've got two issues there, okay? We've got the European Union and we've got trade. two issues that have long been on the side of the Republican Party, free trade and a strong military. Why are these issues now among the electorate?
Well, I think in terms of trade, I will agree with that. The person that asked that question is that it is that it does end up with aggregate growth for a country, but the distribution of those benefits have not been even. And what we have seen is a continued a disadvantaged population from greater trade relations. Overall, it's very healthy for the country. It's healthy for the future. It builds greater connections in terms of opportunities for diplomacy, for leverage with countries that may be pursuing policies that are not in our national interest. So I think it is overall a positive, but it has not been an unmitigated success in individual lives, especially among those who feel that their jobs have been outsourced, when we know very well, and a lot of the problem, of course, with jobs is the automation of the workplace and not so much that...
I read somewhere where they said Trump needs to stop blaming China and Mexico for losing
and
jobs.
Look at computers.
And look at robots.
Well,
but you know what...
That explains, I think, why so many people are disaffected and find Trump's message resonates.
This is one area where, you know, Donald Trump, looking at a policy... really spoke to traditionally Democratic voters.
Yes,
you know, I've
workers.
Seen blue collar workers in particular.
Yep.
I've seen many interviews with them saying, "I'm voting for Trump solely on this issue." In other words, none of the other stuff matters. Don't ask me about his comments. Don't ask me about how he treats women. Economically, I'm suffering. My community is suffering.
Yes.
This should be a warning for Democrats.
Absolutely right.
And I think Democrats already understand this to some degree. I mean, Bernie Sanders
exactly.
made this an issue, and Hillary Clinton took a look at her position on the Trans-Pacific Partnership and said, the way this was the final negotiation on this, I don't accept it. So she essentially responded to this criticism on both sides of the aisle, both Democrats and Republicans. Interestingly enough, though, you haven't seen a lot of Republicans say, "Well, I agree with Trump on this issue." They may support Trump or say, "I'm going to vote for Trump," but they don't say, "I've adopted his trade policy."
How can we? Let's look at the rise of or some level of nationalism that's come as a result of Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
and the nationalism that has long existed in Europe, and the similarities here between Brexit and Trump. Is there a potential that there is a Brexit surprise that comes to America on the eve of the election?
Well, there's always that potential. Polls have tightened. Clinton clearly continues to have the lead from the polls I saw this morning, but it's within, the margin of error. You've got CBS News, New York Times this morning, their poll of likely voters, Clinton is 45% and Trump 42%. But it's a very tight race, and you've got it within the margin of error, so you really, there could be a surprise. But we do have the Electoral College operating, which downplays some of the surprise. It's not simply going to be popular vote. It's obviously is how those votes are distributed and where those states, which states are really leaning that way. And we have had some states that have shifted a little bit, where Trump supporter has gone up a little bit or Clinton support has gone up a little bit. But those things are in play. We could end up with a surprise. I mean, we've had, 22 million ballots cast already, but we won't know until Election Day how the early votes went.
Dr. Nancy Baker, author and retired government professor at New Mexico State University, is our guest, as is Dr. Fred Martino, content director for KRWG-TV and FM, 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or you can also join us on the social media desk, where Simon Thompson is standing by, ready to take your call. Joanne, welcome to Voice of the Public. Thank you for joining us. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that I've been living in this country for 26 years, but I'm still a Canadian citizen. So you still want my opinion?
Yes.
We love your opinion.
Well, I think that the GOP will regret backing up Trump, but I feel for Republicans because a lot of them they just can't stomach Hillary, so they have to back Trump, even though they despise him. But you have the same thing on the Democrat side. A lot of my friends were Bernie Sanders fans, mm-hmm. and they can't stomach Hillary, although, you know, Bernie said, you know, I'm back Hillary and go vote for her, but that doesn't mean they will. Mm-hmm. You have the same, you know, you have your yellow dog Democrats who would rather vote for a yellow dog than vote for a Republican, but you have that on the Republican side, too. Now, what I deplore in this country is the two-party system.
Yes.
More parties should be invited to all the debates, and mind you, they're not strong enough right now, and because people don't know them, they're not invited. And you could take a lesson from Canada, where different parties have been elected over the years, and they still have a chance because people get to hear about them on the radio, on the television. It's not all about money. Here, the money spent on elections is obscene. When I think of all the problems that could be alleviated if that money was put to use instead of elections.
Well, Joanne, you bring up an interesting point. I mean, you know,
it's all about raising funds, but when they get, whoever gets to the White House, they owe so many favors to so many people that they're powerless, and that's what we've seen.
Yeah,
thank you, Joanne.
And clearly we have to have...
I want to address one more issue.
Okay.
Earlier, somebody talked about voter fraud, that it's not a big issue. How do we know if they get away with it?
Well, there's been investigation. I mean, you referenced
there
Nancy,
actually has been a
academic
lot of
study on this.
Study actually, on there this. Are a lot of academic studies on that issue.
So it's good. Joanne, thank you for your call. And Dr. Baker, I want to ask you this question because I'm so glad Joanne called with this about the primary system.
Yes.
We have possible solutions. And I want to get your take on one that California has implemented, which is instead of, you know, a primary with the Republican and the Democrat, it's the top two finishers. So you could have two Democrats. You could have two Republicans. And some argue this reduces the polarization that we see where the Republicans have to play to their extreme base,
yeah.
the Democrats to their, and we don't get candidates who maybe are better for the general election.
Well, and I do think that is true at the primary stage. We've seen that in a few other states. I think Louisiana is one that also has its nonpartisan, sort of an open election process, and the top vote winner or the couple of the top ones prevail, and then they go into the runoff. But I think a real interesting question is trying to break down the power of the two parties, and it can't simply be inviting them to the debate stage. The issue here is the Electoral College. Remember that in 1992, candidate Ross Perot won 19% of the popular vote and zero electors because his votes were not concentrated in a particular state. And as a consequence, you really cannot have a vibrant three- or four-party system in the United States. The way to break it down is I wouldn't mind seeing the end of the Electoral College, but since it's part of the Constitution, that would take sort of supermajorities to pass. Where we can have an effect are in two other reforms. One is to break down, it need not be winner-take-all. That's simply a convention of the states. There's nothing in the Constitution that requires that you might win a state by one vote, you get all the electors. That's plain absurd. Look at the case of Florida in 2000. Gore lost by, what, 500 and some votes, and all of the state's electors, I think there were like 20 something at that time, moved over then to him, 25 electors.
And won the popular vote nationally by half a million votes.
So you can do that. You can make it no longer winner take all, and you can also have an instant ballot runoff. So you can vote for your top two choices on a ballot rather than force yourself into voting for just one. And then it increases the likelihood of, all right, maybe your favorite candidate didn't win, but in all likelihood, your second some candidate that you supported has a chance of winning office. So I think what we need to do is reform the institutional structures. It's not going to happen just by having debate stages open up. It's just institutionally. I mean, you cannot structurally fight against that and create a three- or four-party system.
Okay, we've got about 10 more minutes to go on today's Voice of the Public, 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Simon Thompson, good afternoon. Welcome back to Voice of the Public. You've got a question.
I do. So Meg Freyermuth over Facebook asks, how do misinformed polls and misinformed media affect the election and voter turnout?
Well, I think the polling is generally tries to be accurate, but we do have problems in how you define who is the poll, who is the who you're asking questions. Are you looking just for registered voters? Are you looking for the voting age public? Are you looking for someone who is a likely voter and maybe they won't really vote, but they are lying because nobody wants to say they're going to be a bad citizen and not vote? So it's some of it is a problem. You've got these divergent polls because you don't really know. You've got different approaches for how you're categorizing people and how you're identifying their information. And then there's different ways of weighting that. So in theory, a poll of a couple thousand people could represent of a truly random sample, represent you know, the country, a strong point of view. But that means, let's say, you have a half a dozen Hispanics in that poll, and you're aggregating to the entire population of Hispanic voters in America. It's how do you weight that? So it's very... I don't think polls in themselves are bad. I think they are generally accurate, not always, as we've seen with Brexit. But there's some problems in how polls are conducted. People are no longer answering phones, for example.
Well, how does the person seeing these polls on TV recognize these things?
What's legitimate or not? I think you take it as a point of information. I don't think you look at the poll and say, oh, gosh, my candidate, the person I like is behind. I wasn't going to vote, but now I will. I think you should go to vote anyway.
Okay. Let's take a call from Dr. Devastali, who's joining us on the line. Dr. Devastali, welcome to Voice of the Public.
Yes. Hey, thank you. How are you doing?
We're doing wonderful. Thank you for joining us.
Yes.
Well, I called not because I had a question or a particular comment, but I do want to thank you and your participants, Drs. Baker and Martino, for doing such a great job. It is tiresome to hear all the hyper-partisan bloviating that goes on the air these days.
Yes.
And it's refreshing to see that little Las Cruces and our public radio station are able to air a nonpartisan, nuanced discussion of the facts.
Thank you, Dr.
Well, thank you very much for that compliment. Really appreciate that very much, and that's certainly our goal to do. And that should be what all media is doing, is focusing on the facts and focusing on the issues, not personalities, not tweets. We need to be able to understand the issues. And, you know, it's not to say that we completely ignore other things. But the what I'm saying is that there has to be a focus on issues and facts. And we've been missing that. That was one of the reasons why in our recent congressional debate that we did, we really tried to look at specific issues to get the candidates to comment specifically on what they supported, what they didn't support. So.
And I'd also like to jump in here and point out that we've been through some very bad elections in the past, and I want to be encouraging here that we've weathered them. Well, we didn't weather 1860. But 1800s, that was the election of 1800 was very ugly, very divisive, a lot of similarity to today. Allegations of fraud with Jeffersonian Democrats gaming the selection of the electors. You had the
federalism
power.
Yeah. There's a history.
There's history.
We're not going through
imprisoning,
anything.
Imprisoning,
anything
we're,
new.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to a call from Robin. Robin, thank you for joining us on Voice of the Public.
Yeah, here I am.
Welcome. What's on your mind?
Yeah, as far as elections go, this one has been about average to a little worse than usual as far as nastiness goes, but the election issue I would really like to focus on is the one that strikes home to me in my pocketbook.
Uh-huh.
Why am I paying so much more for health insurance than I am for my mortgage? I want that issue addressed by these candidates, and most of the time they ignore them.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question, and what we're really getting at is relationships between the White House and Congress. The Affordable Care Act was passed in the President Obama's first 2 years, and since then there have been no, there's not been an ability to change it or update it or refine it with practice because we have not been able to get legislation through Congress.
Okay, we'll wrap up the show with something interesting that many of you are going to be happy if you are listeners to commercial radio that you won't be hearing anymore after next week. These are just some samples of some of the advertisements that went around paid for by super PACs. So we'll wrap up the conversation on super PACs.
Republican State Representative John Zimmerman is great at looking out for his corporate pals. Too bad his job is to look out for us. Paid for by Progressive Champions PAC.
Now Dow is running for state representative. If we can't trust her judgment with our children, why would we trust Rebecca Dow at all? Paid for by Patriot Majority New Mexico.
Not showing up for work. Giving away our public waterways. Opposing ethics legislation. It pays to be State Representative Andy Nunez. Too bad we're the ones picking up the check. Paid for by Patriot Majority New Mexico.
Terry McMillan, the bully, supports Donald Trump, the bully. Now, McMillan is being investigated by the state attorney general for Medicaid fraud. It's disturbing, but not surprising. State Representative Terry McMillan, the more we learn about him, the worse it gets.
Paid for by Progressive Champions PAC.
If Small won't stand up for police officers and kids, why should we stand behind him?
We shouldn't. Electing Nathan Small would be a big mistake.
Paid for by Advance New Mexico Now. Jessica Perez, Treasurer. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
How have super PACs changed our election system? And this has to do with black money that is being contributed without any tracking of who gives to whom, and all of a sudden this money appears. And we saw a lot of this for races that 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when I first got involved in commercial radio here in Las Cruces, where if a candidate spent more than $5,000, yeah, that was big news.
Yeah, now we're talking $100,000.
And a lot of it from outside
unbelievable
organizations.
Yeah,
too,
and you know what's very interesting about that? I saw a letter to the editor in the Las Cruces Sun News from the husband of one of the local candidates saying, you know, that there's been a lot of controversy about some of these ads. I want to make it clear, these are not from my wife. These ads are from other outside groups, and we have no control over them. So,
no control. There could be no communication, so there's
right.
no control.
That's
there's
right.
no permission. There's no mother may I. These super PACs.
And in fact, you can't. Under federal law, you can't have coordination between the two because that's a violation of the of federal election law. So these PACs have to operate separately from the candidate, but it does mean these enormous sums of money coming in as a result of the Citizens United decision of 2010. It's been an extraordinary disservice
and
to democracy.
What a great way to end the show, because Citizens United reminds us of this importance of voting for president. The president nominates to the Supreme Court. And I've talked to a lot of people who said to me, I'm not going to vote. And I asked them about that. I asked them about the Supreme Court. Do they care about something, decisions that will last for generations?
Yes, yeah.
So. Well, in addition to the Supreme Court, I mean, well, the Supreme Court is a big issue. How are we going to look, you know, you've got some members of the Senate already saying that they're going to block any nominee by yeah. Hillary Clinton.
And I think that's reckless and undemocratic. And in fact, this is unprecedented, even having for 100 days now, not being able to get a vote on up or down or even hearings on Merrick Garland. That's just, you don't do that. You don't
yeah.
say it's left to the next election. Not when you're that far out. The all it's a kind of bad precedent that maybe the supporters of Donald Trump or the Republicans like today, but could just as easily come back and another couple of administrations and hurt them. You have to be careful that you pay attention to the process and conventions and expectations, norms in the office, because it really creates an environment that makes it possible to govern for all of us.
Dr. Nancy Baker, author of the book Vanished, which is coming out in 2 weeks. It's a novel after doing much academic writing. Welcome back to KRWG. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Dr. Fred Martino, who is our content director here at KRWG Radio and TV. Any predictions for the election, not just nationally, but predictions for what's going to happen in the state?
Well, you know, the only prediction that I can give is based on 2012. You know, a lot, the big headline the day after was President Obama won all of the battleground states and, of course, was reelected. And there was much celebration among Democrats. But I think this election is a reminder to look at the popular vote, which was less than 5% difference between Mitt Romney and President Obama. this is a close election.
Yes.
Dr. Baker, 10 seconds.
I agree that it's close, and I hesitate to make any predictions, but I do think that it's breaking, it's continuing to break for Hillary Clinton, and I think it will hold.
Okay, thank you for joining us on this special Voice of the Public 2016 election special. Dr. Fred Martino is Director of Content. Anthony Moreno helped produce the show. Jake Lockwood was our technical producer. Samantha Sonner worked the phone lines, and Simon Thompson was at our social media desk. Our next Voice of the Public is November 17th, when U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich will join us for a special town hall meeting. Join us on election night for special coverage from NPR and our local reporters. Until then, don't forget to vote.